is up, you guys? It's your boy, Chad Sommer, here on Rock Bottoms Up podcast on Podbean. Today is a special day where my boy, Eric Gillian, is going to join us today, guys. I'm so excited to get into this interview, talk to Eric. His road has been very, very inspirational to me as I have watched him on social media. In fact, it was a TikTok I seen of his that I duetted, and since then we've been brothers ever since. Eric has an amazing following on Facebook, about 250,000 followers, right, Eric?
Yep.
And that's because this guy brings his heart. He's very vulnerable, very lovable. I could see. I mean, I know why I'm friends with him. I can see why others. I would be friends with him, but again, like I said, very vulnerable, but he brings that inspiration and motivation that a lot of people in their life really, really need. So let's get into it, Eric.
All right.
Yeah. Supernatural. All right, Eric, why don't we just start off and let's get to know Eric. Why don't you take us through your childhood to present day.
Yeah. Well, I don't know much of my childhood because I've blocked a lot of it out. Because I've had a lot of traumas when I was a kid. So when I first started school.
Yeah. What age?
I was 8. I was in first grade, I had a teacher that wasn't a big fan of me.
Oh no!
And you know,
teachers make a difference.
Yeah, and I was not only bullied by her. Yeah, I was not only bullied by her, but I was bullied by two students in the classroom.
Oh, you're kidding!
Yeah, and you know, we would have snack time in class.
Yeah.
And my mom, she bought me a giant M&M cookie. And you know, she told us to get our snacks out and have snack. So I did. And my bullies came up to me. And they kept messing with me to have my cookie. They wanted it. And I told them no. I said, you know, I was proud of this thing because it was like something my mom got me and it was big and massive. Yeah. So, you know, I was proud of that. I was like, my mom got me this. And I told him that. I was like, no, this came from my mom. And, you know, the teacher, she was like, oh, be quiet. Oh, okay. She told me to be quiet. You know, the bullies did whatever they did. And they come back.
Buster on you.
Yeah, they come back a couple minutes later, and they're demanding my cookie again. And at this point, the teacher, she had a pull card system, which was a green, yellow, and red card. And the green card meant to be quiet. So we pulled, I had to pull my card, and they had to pull the green card too. So we pulled the green card. I was quiet. They came back up to me again and demanded my cookie. And I told them no again. And this time, one of the bullies slammed their hand on my desk. And so she told them to go sit back down. I had to pull my yellow card, which is be quiet, put your head down. So I did. And I had to put my cookie, my snack away.
Yeah.
And so I did. And I snuck a piece while I had my head down.
Yeah.
And the bully saw me and they told on me. And she made me pull the red card, which meant go to the office.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. So not only did I have to go to the office, but she made me throw my cookie away.
Whoa!
Yeah, and I was completely devastated. I was crying the whole way to the office, and I told the principal, and what happened, and he was like, yeah, that's not okay. So he bought me a soda out of the teacher's lounge. He had a talk with the teacher, and I went back to class after that. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, they just got computers.
Oh, wow.
So we were in computer class, learning how to use the computer and stuff. And she sat me next to one of my bullies, and I said, you know he bullies me. Please don't sit me next to him. Jeez. And she said, tough it up. You can sit next to him.
Oh, jeez.
So I did. And then during that class, I had to go to the bathroom. So I raised my hand to go to the bathroom. My bully slaps my hand down. And he says, no, you don't have to go to the bathroom. And, you know, I kept raising my hand. And then finally, the last time I raised my hand, he actually choked me. And
right there in class.
Yeah. And the teacher told me that she didn't see a thing. So instead of, you know, trying to raise my hand again to go to the bathroom, I peed myself in class.
Oh, jeez.
And I did it, and I made sure that it was the biggest puddle ever so I could get away from him.
Yeah.
And you know, my dad came with some new clothes, and he asked me why I did that. And I told him, I was like, I just couldn't hold it. I never told anybody that I got bullied from him, because, you know, I found that if my teacher didn't believe me, would my parents really believe me?
Right.
So, you know, and then, you know, at the ending of that year, they found out that I had a learning disability. So I was going to be going to a special education school.
Yeah, okay.
And that was actually right across the street from the school that I was going to. So, you know, the teacher gave us a tour of the school. She was like, you know, you're going to this classroom, you're going to that classroom. And then when it came to me, we went to the door, and she goes, you're going to that stupid school over there.
Jeez.
And since, you know, it was still school, pretty much everyone that was there would bully me.
Wow.
So, yeah, they kept calling me retard and stupid and just a bunch of names. And
so it sounds like trauma happened. Yeah. Really young age for you, because I mean, you remember, like you mentioned, like, you know, I don't really remember too much about, you know, my childhood, but isn't it funny how, you know, trauma like that sits yep. with us,
yeah,
you know, most of our lives, you know, unless we deal with it, you know.
Yeah.
So 8 years old, teacher, kids, been bullied, not only bullied, but the teacher was enabling this.
Mm-hmm.
Not on top of it, herself.
Yep.
Belittling you, and bullying you. A teacher. That's crazy. Right? That's crazy. Make us remember. Then what?
Well, and then the following year, you know, I ended up going to this school, and it was the scariest time of my life. Because these kids, they were different.
Yeah.
You know, sure. they had Down syndrome. Some couldn't speak to you. You know, there was all sorts of on the spectrum kids there. It scared me because, you know, my mom's always worked for a group home. So I kind of knew, but, you know, being around it all the time, it was a scary thing. And, you know, I found almost salvation in this school. And really? I realized that these kids that I was afraid of pretty much became my family.
Yeah.
It was great. That school was great. And there was a time that my school was going to be shut down. They were discussing it at the school. So I ended up going to a meeting me and a bunch of friends went to the meeting. It was a great meeting, and, you know, we all stood up and defended the school because, you know, they wanted to put us all in mainstream schools again, and I told my story. And after that meeting, this I remember very vividly. So we were leaving, and I got on my bike, and me and my friends we're going to go hang out at my house. I only lived like two blocks away. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. And then these group of kids came up to us, and they were picking on my friends, and I told them to shut up, and I had a few curse words in there.
Yeah.
And so they continued to harass us, and I said one more thing, and I took off on my bike.
Yeah.
And I remember my friend, she called out to me. She says, all she got out was my name. And as soon as she said my name, I felt this boom. And the dude knocked me off my bike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Physical. Yeah. And he beat me up pretty good.
Wow. Were these older kids? Same grade? Yeah,
they were probably about my age.
Okay.
But they went. They were going to mainstream school.
Gotcha.
I never said anything to my parents, but I got a messed up knee from that. It still hasn't healed properly. This was the year before I graduated.
Oh, so we're a junior now.
Yeah, I participated in the Special Olympics. Yeah, we went to state a bunch of times in Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
What did you get? The Olympics.
I was a swimmer.
Wow.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was a big boy then too. And, you know, I'd make a splash in the water, and then people are like, when I would swim, they're like, he does it so eloquently. He jumps in the water, makes a big splash, but he swims so carelessly. Yeah. And actually,
you're a good swimmer.
Yeah. Actually, my relay team, we almost made it to the World Games in Athens. Yeah. And that is held in Athens, Greece.
What?
Yeah. The only reason we didn't get to go is we couldn't get the funds to go.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And that trip would have been amazing.
And I mean, it's not just being able to go to Athens, Greece, but I mean, you're going there for a reason. I mean, you guys legitimately were good.
Yeah.
So that had to be pretty depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, we were the number one relay team.
Wow, my friend, that's awesome. How was your senior year?
I lived in a new neighborhood, and it was about 4 miles away, or 2 miles away from school.
Oh, wow.
So and I walked every day to and from school.
Wow. You're in Wisconsin, correct?
Yep.
I mean, winter times. Did you get dropped off?
Nope. I walked.
Ooh.
Yep.
That little winter chill probably toughened you up a little bit.
Yeah, I always used to get made fun of for riding the short bus.
Oh, so, yes.
So I said, you know what? I'm just going to walk. And you know, I enjoyed it because at that time, you know, I was 18. You could buy cigarettes legally.
Oh, right.
And, you know, I always look for that day. I'm like, damn, I can't wait to buy my first cigarettes.
Your introduction into adulthood.
And, you know, my parents hated that I smoked.
Yeah.
If they found my cigarettes, they would throw them away. But, you know, I would smoke like 3 or 4 cigarettes on my way to school. Yeah. And then.
Smoker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a very heavy smoker for a long time.
So we graduated.
Yep.
Graduated high school. What happened after high school?
Yeah, I had a few jobs. You know, they didn't work out because of my learning disability.
Okay.
And, you know, I married my ex-wife now in 2007.
How old were you?
I was 20. No, I was 19. 19. And we lived in this apartment, and we both worked at the time at a paper factory.
Okay.
And we started having money issues, and then my ex-wife got pregnant with my first child. We struggled a lot, and
now you guys living on your own trying to make bread?
Yeah, we were, you know, it was either pay rent or get groceries. Jeez. You know. And so we chose to pay rent cuz we didn't have a place to go, you know. So
beginning of married life was pretty rough for you.
Yeah. And here she is pregnant.
And I had to have a lot of stress.
Yeah, it was a lot. So I always made sure she ate before I did because she was pregnant. So she was feeding for another, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And so I had found out by a local homeless guy that KFC in my town, it was like not even a block away, they would separate the food from the regular garbage and throw it away in the dumpster.
Okay.
So I started doing that for her.
So things got really rough then.
Yeah. And instead of me eating, you know, I let her eat, I would smoke cigarettes to curb my appetite.
Wow.
Yeah. I would go through pretty much a carton every 2 days. And at that time, cigarettes were still fairly cheap. So,
yeah.
And, yeah, I would always make sure that she had some food. And then we got some terrible news about my grandfather. He got brain cancer.
Oh, gee, sorry.
And my parents, they knocked on my door. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, who the heck is knocking at my door this early?
Yeah.
And it was my parents. And they told me, now this is the hardest part.
Yeah.
They told me my grandpa doesn't have long. My grandpa was my best friend.
Oh, man.
And he was in hospice. And I still remember this to this day that I grabbed his hand.
Yeah.
While he couldn't talk anymore. He was on his deathbed. And I told him, I said, please be okay for me.
Yeah.
I was very selfish. I mean, he taught me how to mow lawns with a riding lawnmower and a bunch of things that I still cherish those.
A lot of great memories.
And when I told him to be okay for me, he squeezed my hand.
Oh, wow. He could hear you.
Yeah, and then the day after that, he passed away.
That's your best friend.
Yeah, he kicked my ass when I was in trouble.
Sure.
But he gave you a hug when you needed it, and his hugs were so famous. Like, he would hug you so hard that he thought your head was going to fall off.
He was a lover. This one, yeah. This was a hugger.
Yeah.
I bet you followed in the same footsteps. I bet you're a hugger.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Yep.
I bet.
I made sure I carry his legacy on.
Yeah.
With those hugs.
Oh, I bet you do. I bet. Well,
and then,
was this like your experience with, you know, a close family member passing away?
Well, my grandma had passed away before that, his wife.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And it wasn't as hard, but it was still pretty hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, after my grandma passed away, I spent more time with him. And and there was one time
during that time.
Yeah.
You know, so he probably enjoyed your company a lot.
Yes, he did. And he was a very lonely man, and I always made sure I had time for him.
Yeah, there's your one.
And I remember this one time that he let me drive his brand new tractor, riding lawnmower.
Woo!
No dents, no scratch. It was a John Deere.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he paid like $2,500 for this thing.
Wow, that's a Cadillac lawnmower, right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah. Yeah, this was definitely the Cadillac of mowers.
Wow.
And he had an apple orchard. And there was this wall next to the apple orchard.
Oh, dear.
And I didn't know how to slow down.
Oh, no, Eric.
And the chute for the grass hit this wall hard.
Oh, no.
And I could see the disappointment on his face.
Oh, I'm sure.
But he, you know, you could see it, but he didn't. He tried so hard not to show it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, it's okay, you know. And we laughed about it a couple hours after that. And he goes, well, now you know how to stop.
Yeah.
And not hit the wall.
Well, I can tell where you get your kind heart from.
Yeah, he is a great man.
You do the same for others.
Yep.
You definitely honor your grandpa, Eric. That's really cool. Really.
And then,
grandpa passed away. How old was the baby born? Was your boy born yet?
Yep, he was born in 2008.
Okay, and then grandpa.
He passed in 2008, just a few months before my son was born.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and
that happened for you pretty quick.
Yeah.
And you lost your best friend.
Yeah, and my son's middle name is my grandpa's first name. So
there you go. Way to go. That's cool. I bet you tell stories to your son. I bet he's pretty proud of that middle
name. Yeah.
I bet
he is. He tells me every day, he says, I wish I could have met him. And I said, he would have loved you so hard. And I still remember when my grandpa was still able to talk.
Yeah.
I told him, I was like, I'm going to have my son. His middle name is going to be your first name. And he goes, don't you do that. I hate my first name. Yeah, that was funny. He was cracking a joke, and I was like, well, too bad. It's going to be his middle name.
I bet that made him proud.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. That was it.
So after Grandpa just passed away, obviously you're going through your mourning.
Mm-hmm.
Newborn baby.
Oh, yeah.
Take us from there.
We everything was great. Until I hit 21.
21.
Yeah.
You were looking forward to 18. I can't imagine what you were looking forward to when you turned 21, Eric.
Yep, going out to the bars.
Oh, boy.
Me and my boys, we'd always go out to the bar. There was a bar in our town that is $10. All you can drink rails and tap beers till it was like from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock. $10, all you can drink.
Wow.
And me and my boys, we made sure that we put them away before 11 o'clock.
I'd have been dead.
Yeah, we should have been. We should have been.
Wow. Resilient.
Yeah, I was a rum and coke guy, and I would, lamb those, another one, and at the end of the night, I would go to, my buddy's house to sleep it off because, my son's, he's a baby and
sure.
I didn't want to have that around him. And
so was this like this new, this new partying, going out to bars, wife's at home with the kid? Did it start creating a wedge in your relationship?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep. And in fact, we were living with my parents at the time, and then we ended up moving out to another town called Genoa City.
Okay.
And so I stopped going to the bars.
What made you?
There was no, I couldn't find a good bar to go to.
Okay.
And, Gotcha. Yeah, my boys weren't around,
What brought you out that way? Did your parents move and you just moved with them, or?
No, me and the wife at the time, we wanted to be on our own again.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
And we found a apartment. It seemed great at the time. It was only $750 a month, 2-bedroom. And, yeah, I remember the New Year's when we first moved in there. My buddy came up and we just bought copious amounts of alcohol.
Boy.
We had, what, like 6 bottles of Jack Daniels, you know, like 3 or 4 bottles of Jägermeister, beer and, you know, wine coolers.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It was a bet of alcohol is what you're saying.
Yeah. And it was only me, my wife, and my best friend. And, you know, my wife went to bed. And so I kept drinking. My buddy passed out on the couch. And I'm like, what are you doing? We still have all this alcohol that we need to go through.
Hey, before man.
Yeah. And so he drank for a little bit more, passed back out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to blare some music. And I'm going to drink every bit of this alcohol until it's gone.
Wow.
This is where my alcohol addiction came into play.
Yeah, I can kind of tell, like, I mean, it's starting to sound like you're like, if it's there,
yeah,
to do it until it's done.
Pretty much. There's
definitely some alcohol or addictive tendencies there.
I didn't drink to have fun anymore. I drank to get drunk, and that was it.
Yeah, you wanted to get there real quick.
Yep, and I did. I did.
From that grocery list that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yep. And
so now you're obviously you're developing an addiction for alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I woke up in my bedroom not knowing how I even got there, and
kind of blacked out even.
Yeah, I was blacked out drunk, and that was like the first and last time I've actually ever been blacked out drunk, but I still drank to pass out.
Yeah, kind of help you go to bed anyway.
Yeah, and I ended up hurting myself, and I got these pain meds.
Okay.
There was pain meds, and then there was a booster pack that went with them. I finished the booster pack, so I wasn't getting those anymore. But for some reason, I still don't know why.
Yeah.
But I started experimenting with these pain pills.
Hmm.
And I started taking more than what I was supposed to.
Yeah.
I would take, like, 5, and then I would pass out as soon as I took those.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. So the next time I took them, I'd take 7. And then I'd pass out, and then I'd wake up, and I'm like, you know, I wonder what would happen if I took more. So I kept taking them. Every time I woke up, I'd take 2 or 3 or 4 more.
You got it. Addictive behavior.
Yep. You know, I still don't know why I did it, but I did it, you know. And
I mean, if you were drinking, I mean, to go to sleep, like, yeah. Obviously stress, you know, there's probably some issues that
yeah.
Obviously Eric wasn't happy with Eric.
Right.
And you were finding your way out through alcohol and now introduced to pain pills.
Yep. And
how old were you around this age?
I'm about 25.
So you married 5 years now.
Yep. And, you know, it was just, I took these pills and I would get to a point to where I'd wake up and I'd throw up, but I didn't care. I would take more.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you were struggling.
Yeah. Some, struggling. some something was wrong. I didn't know what, you know, at the time. I still didn't even consider it an addiction at that time. And so we had neighbors. And me and my wife, we weren't the cleanliest of people. These neighbors would always complain to people, you know. And then there was one time we weren't even home and people were complaining that we were making noise. And I told the manager, I was like, we're not even home. And they're like, well, cut the bullshit. We know you're making it up, you know. I'm like, we're literally not home. I don't know what you want me to tell you. And so this happened a few times. And then I remember a knock at the door. It was an officer and a CPS worker. And I was still out of it from taking all my pills. And my wife answered the door. She was trying to clean up a little bit while I was puking. And they came to the door and they're like, well, we're here to check your apartment out because we've heard that you were abusing your children, making them go to the bathroom on the floor and all this stuff. And there was so much crap that people were saying about my kids and saying that we did. And yeah, I started drinking even more at that point.
So, what was the end result with the officer and the CPS?
They took our kids.
They did.
Yep, oh, for 30 days.
And so kids, that you had your boy and your girl at this point.
Yeah.
So you got your kids taken away.
Yeah. All because of accusations.
Wow, Eric. Did you get it? What happened?
We got them back after.
You got your kids back.
Yeah, we got them back after 30 days, you know, because we had to keep the apartment clean. I had to be sober, which was super hard. I remember a dream I had after I took more pills. You know, I knew that I had to be sober, but I couldn't. I just couldn't.
Addict. Well, you're an addict.
Yeah. And
how long were you on pain pills?
Oh, like 6 months.
6 months. Okay.
Yeah, and I was able to finally break free from, but this dream I had, you know, after taking my pills, I would sleep in the living room. There was an elderly woman standing by my door, the front door of the apartment, inside my apartment. And I said, what are you doing here? This is my home. And she goes, well, this used to be my home.
Oh, no.
And she goes, I see that you're sad, and I see that you're going through a lot of things. So why don't I make you your favorite meal? And I said, okay, so what would that be? She said, barbecue chicken. And I was like, yeah, that's one of my favorite meals.
Wow.
And, you know, she had all this chicken. She got it out of the freezer and she was putting barbecue on them and everything, all the seasonings, everything that I liked. And she put it in the oven. And then she goes, I have to go now. But remember, I love you.
Wow.
And I woke up and I still felt something. And I went in the kitchen and I opened the oven. There was obviously nothing in there.
Yeah.
But that oven smelled like barbecue chicken. Yeah.
Wow.
Eric, yeah.
You had Aunt Edna coming along, man.
Yeah. Well, we found out that where our apartment was, there was a train track that used to go through there in the 1800s and the early 1900s. And I guess she had a house that was there by the train tracks.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was so crazy to, some, you know, she came to visit me.
Good, sweet old lady. Just
yeah.
people, seeing that you're struggling in your addiction, and
yeah,
just wanted to pour in the little air.
Yeah, and after that dream, I started slowing down on the pills, and it was very hard. I would get sick, wanting more pills. I would fiend for them, and I got to a point. Me and my wife ended up arguing because of my pills, because I didn't have any more, and I wanted her to go to the doctor, because at this point I wasn't allowed to get any more.
Okay.
So I was trying to get my wife to go say, okay, well, you're in pain. Go tell them something.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so I tried to end my life.
Oh, Eric.
I took a bath towel and I went to go sit in my kids' empty room, and I tied it as tight as I could around my neck. And I had it. I was done. I didn't want to live anymore. My kids were gone. I couldn't get off these pills, but I was slowing down enough, but it wasn't enough yet. And, something came over me when, I started to black out a little bit, and, I don't know what it was, whether it was God or someone in the spiritual world, but they made me yell for my wife, and I yelled as loud as I could, and she helped me. She unwrapped the towel, and she was very mad at me, but understandably, because I just tried to end my life.
That's got to be traumatic.
Yeah, and
thank God you yelled, Eric.
Yeah, I still to this day don't know why I yelled. I felt the need to. Something just, it was like something told me to. Yeah. And I felt it. I felt it in my heart, and I cried for like 2 days after that. Just remorse and
Eric, like, you get to the point where you're so low as a human being.
Yeah.
That, your loved ones, your wife, your children, that their life is better off without you. Like,
yeah.
And that's low, my friend.
You were
really struggling, bud.
Yeah. And then, a couple weeks after that, we finally got our kids back. And I was better, I had officially stopped the pills.
Yeah.
But I was still drinking, and not as heavily, but I was still drinking. Yeah. And so we moved back to my town and into an apartment. This was 2013, 2012. And it was great for a while. And then I found that my wife was cheating on me. She was texting people, inappropriate things. And, she was like, well, why did you go through my phone? Well, her phone went off. And I figured, well, we're husband and wife.
That's the end of it. Sister Bobette.
Right. And it ended up being one of her people that she cheated on me with. And that's when I really found out she was cheating. And it put me into another depression. And, I didn't want to take pills. I didn't want to drink. So I started eating.
So what was, like, how, I mean, you said you were always kind of a big kid.
Yeah.
At this point in your life, how tall are you, Eric?
I'm 6'1".
Tall kid. So here you are. I mean, you just had an attempt on your life. Got your kids back. Now you just found out that your wife is sleeping around.
Yep. And, you know, I've always felt like she was, but I never had the proof.
Yeah.
And I got it in a text message, and I don't know why, but I stayed with her.
So did you call her out? Like, how did that happen? Like, I mean, did she admit to it, or?
I did call her out. I like, so why are you talking to men like this? And that's when she's like, well, why are you going through my phone?
Yeah.
And that's when I said, well, your phone went off. So I answered it.
Right.
And I said, by the way, I messaged him and I told him that I'm your husband. And I had a few choice words for him.
Yeah, I know. Because
this guy, he knew that I was married to her.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he was like a family friend, I guess. Not to me, but to her family. And I just stayed with her because, you know, I didn't want to move back in with mom and dad. And so I stayed. And
was there like an agreement, like, hey, you gotta stop hanging out with these guys, stop sleeping around, or like?
Yeah, she did apologize and everything for that. So, you know, I was like, okay, whatever. So, you know, I stayed because I, you know, like I said, I didn't want to move in with my parents again.
Yeah,
because I was enjoying the freedom.
Yeah, of course. So. Found out she's sleeping on you.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping around. You said you didn't want to drink. You didn't want to do pills. Now all of a sudden food becomes your go-to.
Yep.
So how big were you at this point?
Big
boy or?
No, I'd say 300 pounds or so.
300 pounds, 6'1".
Yeah. I
mean, big boy, but not like big boy.
Yeah. And, you know, we still didn't have a whole lot of money, so we'd end up going to the food pantry, and she started enabling me with the food, and she was giving me all the cookies and the cakes and the ice creams and everything, and I would eat it all in one sitting. I got to that point.
So you are an addict. I can identify this, because, I mean, I battled, you know, weight and drugs and alcohol my entire life. And so,
yeah.
you know, this is how I identify with it, is we don't, I'm excessive compulsive. So we don't plan on saving anything. It's, mm-hmm. it's there. We're going to sit there and do it all until it's gone.
Yep.
And so we got, relatable addiction right there.
Yeah. And you know, I would eat it all. It was like, and I was happy again. I was like, so, you know, this is great. I'm finally happy again.
You're finding happiness through food.
Yeah. It was my comfortable spot. And, you know, I always hung out in my room because my mother-in-law would come over all the time, and I wasn't a big fan of her. Yeah.
Bedroom, huh?
Yep, so I had ended up putting my recliner in my room and my PlayStation, my big TV in there, and that was my safe zone, pretty much. And so she had gotten a job babysitting one of our neighbor kids. So she would bring home like $20-$30. And I would ask her to go to McDonald's every time she'd bring home money. And she'd like, okay, what do you want? I would say 6 McDoubles, 4 large fries, and 3 to 4 Dr. Peppers, large Dr. Peppers. And I had these twice a week, pretty much. And then she started working more. So I was eating it more than twice a week.
And you, like, she'd go out and she wasn't concerned about, hey, you're eating too much. And at this point, did you start noticing the gaining of the weight?
Yep. Because, you know, I didn't move anywhere. I stayed in my room all the time.
Just sitting and eating all day long.
Yep. And I had ended up getting myself up to 600 pounds then. And
while you guys were married.
Yep. And then I found out again that she was cheating on me.
Oh, dear.
Oh, man. Yeah. And so this was about 2015.
You found out she was cheating again.
Yep. And I found out by neighbors.
Oh, you're kidding. The neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Eric, by the way, like when you leave, this guy comes.
No, because she would leave to go cheat on me.
Oh, she would always leave.
Yeah. And there was one time my neighbor caught her at another neighbor's house.
At another neighbor's house.
Yeah. She came out in her underwear.
Oh, you're kidding, Eric.
Yeah. And that still wasn't enough to get me to leave.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started eating more.
Just
and then
happiness there. Like you said, when you started getting those cakes and the cookies, you're like, I was happy. I was happy. So now all of a sudden, again, you found out that, I mean, it doesn't sound like she was just sleeping around. It sounds like she was sleeping around.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of my other neighbors actually had caught her at a hardware store. And she was in my truck. And she was holding another dude's hand. He was outside of the truck and she was inside the truck.
Wow.
And he told me, he confronted her and said, you know, this is her husband's truck, just to let you know.
And, wow.
Yeah, and he walked off. Like it was no big deal. And, you know, I still stayed. And then one day in 2015, she kicked me out.
Wow, Eric.
Yep.
Wow.
And I moved in with my parents for a little bit. And we got back together in 2016.
Wow, Eric.
Yep. And, you know, she said, I changed, I love you, I don't want anything else, I love you. She convinced me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, we're still dealing with CPS at that time, too. We had a caseworker, and she highly advised that I didn't go back with her because I was doing better on my own. I was losing weight. I was, you know... Everything was great. And I said, I'm sorry, but I love her. You know?
Well, I mean, in perspective, I mean, this was, I mean, you guys got married at 19.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I'm not saying this was your first love, but I mean, this is somebody that you love so much that you dedicated your life to.
Yeah. We went to high school together, you know, we grew up together in high school. So, you know, I loved her. So I said, you know, if God can forgive, then so can I.
Yeah.
And so I did. And it was great for a long time.
So at this point, you went from mom and dad's back to her place, or did you stay at your place?
We went back to the apartment that we were in originally.
Okay.
And it was great. Everything was fine. And then I was stupid to believe that she wasn't going to cheat on me again.
Yeah.
And she did. And again, I stayed like the last time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, she has no respect for you whatsoever.
Nope.
No respect for you whatsoever. Because you kept staying.
Yeah.
She's like, I mean, what, you know, I can go go off and do whatever I want to. And what's the worst thing that's going to happen? He gets sad and Ian feels bad, but yet he still stays.
Yeah.
So it's disrespectful to cheat on anybody anyway, because what a horrible thing to do to another person. And the sneakiness that, you know, the sneaking around, and it got to the point where it didn't even seem like she cared, you know, being out in public with another man. And so there you are, Eric, you found out. So who, I mean, was this just the same guys or?
Yep.
Same guy.
Same one.
Same guy.
Yep. And I found out that how I found out this time is, you know, she was talking to him and I'm like, okay, whatever. They weren't being bad on the phone or anything.
Yeah.
I found out that she had changed her password on her phone. That was a little suspicious to me because I'm like, why would you do that if you're not cheating?
Right.
And so I typed this dude's name in her password, and it was his name.
Oh, you're kidding, Eric.
Yeah. And then as soon as her phone opened up, it was a picture of her and him snuggling together. Yeah. Yeah. And I still didn't leave. I don't know why, but I should have learned my lesson.
Well, I mean, you have your kids.
Yeah.
So you're a dad. So at least you can find comfort in being a father, you know, being there for your kids, you know, being some stability, you know, in the house. Why she ran around and did her thing.
Yeah.
So.
And then, you know.
Where are we at timeline here? Are we 27?
This is 2016 still.
2016 still.
Yeah. And she started to physically, mentally abuse me. Physically and mentally abuse me.
What do you think that, what do you, because you hadn't mentioned any of that abuse earlier. What?
No.
What happened there? Why did she become all of a sudden now so abusive?
I don't know.
All of a sudden just started getting angry.
Yeah, she would climb on top of me and start pinching me and poking me and slapping me. And, you know, I would tell her, I was like, please, please stop.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, "This, you're hurting me, like literally hurting me."
Yeah.
And she started calling me names, and this went on for about a year.
Yeah.
So, 2017, she kicked me out again.
Wow.
Yep. And I was.
Did she move the guy back in?
Yep. He moved back.
This, I mean, you have been physically abused, Eric. It's just. This woman that you love so much, this woman that you like gave her just chance after chance, forgiving her, hoping and praying that she would change her ways.
Yep.
And she kicks you out probably for the last time because he moves in.
Yep. And
when did you guys get the divorce?
2018, we were officially going to court, and she was trying to keep my kids away from me.
So she was playing games.
Yeah, and I was couch surfing between, you know, my parents' house and my buddy's house. Sometimes I'd sleep in my van, and, you know, it was like whatever I felt like, I guess, at the time.
You weren't back with the parents?
No, I slept in their driveway a few times.
Did you?
Yeah.
What was the situation?
I wanted to be free. So I didn't want to make my parents feel like they had to take me in. So, you know, they let me sleep in the driveway. And, you know, she kept, every time I tried to call the kids, well, they don't want to talk to you. They don't want to talk to you. And she started telling the kids that I didn't love them anymore.
Oh, Eric.
And that I didn't want them anymore. I was done with her and the kids. And yeah, and I went to my son's birthday party. He hid from me.
Oh, you're kidding.
He would hide from me. And I was out on her back deck. She lived in a town, it was called Beloit now. And found out not only she was telling the kids that, but her mother was telling the kids all these things too. And so I'm there at the birthday party, sitting on the back deck. My daughter's out there. We're hugging, you know, having a good time. He comes out, looks at me, he took my hat off. He starts pulling my hair.
What?
Yeah. And it wasn't like a, I'm just playing with you type, you know, he starts pulling it. And he starts slapping me, punching me. And I get up and said, "What are you doing?" And he ran back in the house, hid back into his little corner that his mom made him. And she told me to leave. Yeah. And, you know, we're going through court. And the judge granted me primary custody.
So you won primary custody of your children?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they found she wasn't fit for that role.
Wow.
But she was trying to go for sole custody, and the judge wouldn't have it.
Wow, Eric. Usually the case is, usually, court usually keeps that mom involved, if not the majority of the custody.
Well, when we were going through mediation, she would get upset. Like,
oh, she was showing some anger.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, her stories weren't adding up to what she was accusing me of. And, you know, mediation knew, they're like, no, that's not adding up. The judge could see her bull crap, you know.
You get custody of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
How old are your kids at this point?
11 and 7, I believe, somewhere around there.
Okay. All right. So it's been 5 years.
Yeah. And so I ended up moving back in with my parents. That was 2018. And I met my wife now, and she saved me.
Praise God, Eric.
You know, she...
To this point, Eric.
Yeah. I
respect you so much, brother.
Yeah.
You have been through so much, brother. Thank you, God, for bringing this. What a sweet, sweet woman into your life. Mm-hmm. Not only did she love Eric, but you just said she saved you. How did she save you, Eric?
Just by being there for me.
Just support.
She went through the whole divorce with me too. And, you know, there was a video that played on YouTube, and it was of a little girl, and it was a dinosaur, and she said, he lost his mommy. It was the little girl's voice, and I cried.
Just broke.
It sounded just like my daughter, and I still didn't, at that point, I didn't have custody yet. We're still battling, just being able to go see my kids. It broke me so hard.
He'd been through so much to this point. I mean, a man can only take so much.
Yeah, it was bad. And so she...
Watching a little YouTube, Eric finally lets it out.
Yep. Just a random little girl. And it just broke me. And I sat there And I started tearing up. And, you know, my wife now, she comes up to me and goes, "What's wrong?" I played her the video again. And I start bawling even harder. And I go, "That's my little girl. And that's my baby, man." You know, I couldn't see the kids because she was keeping them from me. I couldn't, you know, it broke me so hard. I lost faith in God. You know, I didn't care anymore. And when I finally got custody of my kids, I knew that God was on my side again. But, you know, that whole time, I wasn't sure.
So, the woman saved you. You finally get your kids.
Yep.
Had you been still eating a lot?
No, I was actually, I was losing weight at that point.
Okay, so so you said you got to 600.
Yep.
Where, how low did you go from 600?
The last time I was weighed, I was 542.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
A lot of that weight off.
Yeah, and then I started working at Walmart.
Okay.
In 2019. And yeah, everything was going good. Me and my wife, we got a trailer together.
You got a job.
Yeah.
It's going good.
We were paying our bills on time. Hell, we were even paying rent before it was due. You know, it felt great. And we were supposed to get married in 2020. And we all know what happened in 2020.
Right. A bit.
Yeah, and it was a scary time when you were working at Walmart, being an essential worker, you know.
Sure.
And seeing the cooler that I worked in the dairy department, seeing that cooler being, you know, filled every day, filled to nothing.
Wow.
You know, and there was one time we were lucky enough to get a thing of eggs, you know, a whole pallet of eggs in. And instead of putting it on the shelf, we were told to wheel the pallet out and walk away.
Really?
Yeah. And as soon as we got the pallet out there, me and my supervisor, a lady came up to me and she had scratched me on my arm. She was like, she was so desperate to get just a carton of eggs.
Oh.
And I have the scar on my arm from her scratching me. And
desperate. She's, please help.
Yeah. And I was like, that's it. I gotta leave.
Eric's like, okay, this is getting too much. I mean, I'm seeing some scary stuff happen at work. I'm seeing food disappear. I'm seeing people,
yep, like
people changing to desperate.
Yep.
And you're like, all right, that's enough of this zoo. I'm out. Is your little lady still working at the time?
Yeah, she she was working at Walmart with me, but she ended up working for a daycare shortly before COVID.
Okay, so she had just switched jobs.
So I left, you know, I couldn't do it. And yeah. So, you know, not having a job, and I got depressed again. And, you know, me and my wife, we were supposed to get married in 2020, and we had everything all set. We were supposed to get married in, it's called Devil's Lake. It's in the Wisconsin Dells. And we had it all set up. They said, yeah, it's fine. Just keep it small, you know. So, okay, we agreed. And my dad was going to officiate for us because he's a ordained minister.
Okay.
And everything was great. And then a week before we were supposed to be married, they called and said, we can't host you here.
Oh, no.
And we had We had a week set in the Dells. You know, everything was going to be great. And it just fell apart on us. And I kept eating. And I got to a point then I could barely stand up for 15 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. And we ended up going to the Dells. You know, we're like, you know, we got to make something positive out of this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, now that I'm with my wife, she always, always tried to find the positive in something.
Yeah.
So we went up there and we had a good time for a whole week. You know, we stayed in a camper. The campground we stayed in was called Bonanza. And funny enough, the day we got up there, it was raining. So we stayed and hung out in the camper. And I turned on the TV in the camper. Funny enough, there's the show Bonanza playing on the TV.
That's so funny because I was raised with Bonanza. So I had, that's what Grandma and Grandpa used to watch. So when you said that, all of a sudden the Cowboys started coming out.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, and we had a good time. And
so you got
Yeah. Well, not then.
Oh no, not then.
Yeah, because we just went up to the Dells to have fun.
I just get out.
Yeah. And you know, it was good for a while, and then 2021 started, and me and my wife, we were both kind of depressed, so we would go out to eat pretty much all the time. We would go to Chinese or order DoorDash and, you know, junk food. Yeah, and, you know, I wasn't thinking anything of it. I was happy again.
Yeah.
You know, it was great.
Hobie.
And then shortly before 2022, you know, we set another wedding date. And this time it was sticking. I couldn't stand up for more than 2 minutes.
And so it got to that point.
Yeah. I didn't realize it. I was happy, so I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, I couldn't walk from my living room to my bedroom, which is 20 feet away. I had to stop in the kitchen where I had a computer chair to sit in for like 10, 15 minutes to take a break. And when I would take a break, I would open the fridge and eat more, you know.
Yeah.
And then I would walk to the bedroom, and from the kitchen to the bedroom, like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And I'd be huffing and puffing so hard. And I ended up getting COVID.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. And I almost lost my life from COVID. I was refusing to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was like, I can do this. I'm strong. I can do this.
Yeah.
And my wife, she would yell at me, you got to go, because I was spitting up blood at this point. And my breathing, I found out, was only at 20%.
Wow.
And the hospital, they told me, if you wouldn't have come in tonight, you would have been dead in the morning. Yeah.
Oh, out of that woman again.
Yeah.
What a woman you got.
It took her to call my dad, you know, to yell at me. My dad had to literally yell at me. And he's like, you have to go.
Yeah. Thank God you listened to her.
Yeah. And I did. And, you know, they put a breathing mask on me, and I was fighting that because I don't know why. I started developing anxiety because of it. And they kept giving me meds to calm me down and everything. And every 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, hey, I'm going to take this off, or you guys need to give me something. And so they ended up shipping me out to a hospital called Summit. in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. I was there for 2 weeks. Jeez. And I was at my lowest point again.
Yeah.
I wasn't with my family. You know, they couldn't come up and see me. And if my wife came up, she had to wear a mask and she was only allowed to be there for like 5 minutes. Wow. And we lived like 45 to 50 minutes away from there. So, you know, I just told her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just told her, I was like, it's fine. We'll call on the phone and stuff.
Yeah.
And I got very low in the hospital and I lost faith again. And I wanted to end it there, but something told me just to hang on.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. And the day that I was being released, I couldn't wait to get out of there. My wife was waiting downstairs for me. And they weren't hurrying up. So it was like, she was waiting from like noon until 6 o'clock in the evening.
What?
For me. Yeah. It for some reason it took that long. And I get in the car and I'm happy, kind of, but I'm like in this weird happy, but I'm still at my lowest point again.
Well, I mean, You're reunited with your wife, obviously. That's you know, that
yeah,
feel like home, right?
Yeah. And first thing I told her to do was to go to Fleet Farm, which was right across the street. And my nemesis was Orange Slice candies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I loved those things. So I had her go in. I said, get me 2 packs of Orange Slice candies and some beef sticks. Because I was tired of the hospital food.
Yeah, you're craving your go-tos.
Yeah, I was sitting there after she got them and I was eating these candies. And, you know, I thought that it was going to make me happy eating these. But that whole black darkness, you know, started hitting me. And I was like that for
the doom and gloom.
Yeah, I was like that for about a couple months after getting out of the hospital. And I was eating whatever I could. You know, I was trying to hide my sadness and my darkness from my kids, but they knew.
Yeah, they seen something up. What's up
with it? It was just a bad time, and
it's a dark time for you.
Yeah, and then so now a couple months, everything's better again. Our wedding date is still planned, and you know, something clicked in my head. Like, you can't stand for 2 minutes. How are you going to get married to this beautiful woman that saved your life?
All of a sudden, you're feeling inadequate.
Yeah. So, I didn't want to marry her at that point because I didn't feel like she deserved that. And so I tried my hardest to lose a lot of weight. I quit drinking at that time, and I said, you know, when we get married, I'll drink then, you know. But until now, I'm not drinking. I'm going to eat as little as possible.
Where are we at, like, in time frame here? 21, 22?
Yeah, 22 now.
22. So you've been on TikTok for a hot minute then.
Yep. Yeah, I think for TikTok, I've been on there for 6-7 years now. Yeah. Maybe 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I was the fat bearded guy and I would do the shirtless dance videos and on there. So, you know, that's how I started losing more weight, is doing these dances and You know, I would stand up. I would be leaning on the bar in the kitchen. And I got myself to be able to stand for like 15 minutes, bent, you know, leaning on something. And so I said, okay, I'm married. We'll get married. And I had a cane with me the whole time. And, you know, during the ceremony, my dad, he married us. And,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. During the ceremony, he kept asking, are you okay? Are you okay? And I kept telling him, no, I'm not okay. My legs were shaking. My knees were shaking. But I stood there because I know that's what she deserved, my wife. And I was in so much pain after that. I knew that I had to change my life.
Yeah.
Or I was going to die, and she doesn't deserve that either, or my kids.
Yeah.
So I changed up all of my TikTok videos to trying to lose weight. You know, I had a bunch of, you know, creators that reached out to me and told me, well, this is what they did, that's what they did, and they were helping me, trying to.
Yeah.
But I was still in my active addiction phase with food. I knew that I needed to lose weight, but the addiction was there still, you know. And I tried. I kept trying. And then, you know, winter hit 2022, and I gave up on trying to lose weight. And, you know, I was pretty big on Facebook at that time, and a lot of people were disappointed in me, and I was at my lowest point again. So I started eating more and more and more again, and I was lying to everybody on social media. I was telling them that I'm doing great, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, everything's awesome. I was lying to everybody and to myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I knew that I needed help. And I knew that, you know, I'd lost my faith. So I asked God, I was like, God, if you're real, I really need your help.
What a humble prayer.
And I said, if you don't mind just sending me some help,
yeah,
I'd appreciate it. 2023 rolls around, summertime. I'm back at it again. I'm working as hard as I can. You know, in my trailer park, there was a circle. And if you walked the whole thing once around, it was about a mile. And I tried that every day. And I would get discouraged when I couldn't make it.
Sure.
You know, I would only be able to make it halfway. And then I got my walker, and I started walking with that. And then one day, you know, I put on some music on my headphone, borrowed my son's phone, and I live streamed it on YouTube or Facebook. And I made the circle.
Yeah.
And I was playing Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah.
And there's a song that really related to me. And it's called Wash It All Away. And I did that day.
Yes.
And when I got back to the trailer, I sat down in my walker. You know, I was already having trouble breathing, but I started crying. It just, like, I was like, God is there for me. He's there. And I felt that over, you know, like when God reaches out and touches you, you feel that.
It's unmistakable.
You can't. Yeah. And I felt that, but I was trying to breathe, but I was crying, and it was so hard. But it was the best feeling that I have had in a long time.
You got it.
And since then, I've been dealing with my addiction. Sure. Still, I still deal with it,
sure.
But not as bad as what it used to be. Yeah. You know, and we moved out of the trailer because there was holes in the floor, and they wanted to raise our rent. We moved back in with my parents in 2023, and 2024, I believe, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And
just a few months ago.
Yeah, it was a great feeling. You know, everything's going again. Everything's great. I did a few videos here. I did one of me running with my kids in the back. You know, we were running in the backyard and having a good old time. And
yeah,
you know, everything's been good now. You know, I had a job for a while, and you know, I was working for a cab.
Oh no, no.
Yeah, I was working. Huh?
Did you go back to Walmart or no?
I did go back to Walmart only for about a week, and it wasn't the same, and I was having PTSD moments. Oh. You know, I was seeing where I got scratched and all this stuff. So I was like, I just can't do this. And so 2 weeks later, I got a job that I loved. And I was, I worked for a cab company for about 2 or 3 months. And,
do you like that?
I did. It was great. But the only thing that, I didn't like is they relied on me too much.
Oh.
They were kind of using me at that point. And, you know, my mom started telling me, she's like, you know, I really need help.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't do a whole lot. Your dad can't do a whole lot. We need your help. So I left it to help my parents. And, you know, that's what I'm doing now. But I'm actually going to be doing like Uber pretty soon so I can make some income. But, yeah, you know, when I had that wheelchair scale, I don't know if you remember that. When we moved out of the trailer, there was a really heavy box that was on the cord. And instead of my son moving the box.
Sure. He just pulled it.
He just pulled it and it ripped. And yeah, I didn't have a scale for a really long time now, because even if I did replace the cord, I don't have room for it here where I'm at.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a scale. So I'd go to the doctor and weigh in, and you know, I was 643 pounds.
What was your heaviest, Eric? Do you recall?
My heaviest that I have recorded is 725. But my actual heaviest I don't have recorded was 800 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't talk about the 800 pounds because people, you know, they're like, well, you don't have proof of that, so you're lying. You know, so I don't talk about that. So I only talk about what I do have proof of.
Yeah.
You know, my family and friends, they know that I was 800 pounds because I had ended up in the hospital because I had cellulitis. Okay. And it was real bad. And my buddy took me and they weighed me on the bed, and I was 783 at that. And that was the last time I was weighed. And I know that I gained more weight after that. So,
yeah,
you know.
So, I mean, here you are, Eric. I mean, top in the scales, 800.
Yeah. Things, on the bed.
Things start finally, you know, starting to go good for you. You're starting to get that life back into your eyes.
Yep.
that motivation.
Yep. And
I mean, what were you? I mean, you got down to 608, 609.
I got down to 609.
We had a bad week.
Yep.
What happened? Just craving.
Yeah, well, I got invited because my kids got invited to go to this restaurant, and I was like, you know, my buddy, I haven't seen him in a while. We'll go have dinner with him.
Yeah,
and you know, so you know, I was like, well, if I have some chicken, it's not going to be as bad as pizza and all that stuff. So
we start.
Yeah. So
is that and the other? It's not.
As yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I'm losing weight, so whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had two plates of the same thing. Two pieces of chicken, two biscuits, and a little bit of noodles with some Alfredo sauce on them. Both plates were the same.
Yeah.
And then the next night I had a huge Jersey Mike sub. It's called the Big Kahuna. It's like a Philly cheesesteak sub. And it was the giant one. Yeah. I love Philly cheesesteaks, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't think of it at the time. I'm like, I'm still losing weight, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I ate the bread and everything. And
yeah.
And the next day, I was craving a snack. And, you know, I know it's not a snack because I ate the whole bag. So that's technically not a snack. But I ate that in the whole sitting. And then I felt bad about that. So, you know, and then I weighed in and I was 618 again.
Yeah.
So, and then my mom, and I appreciate what she did. She called me out.
Good.
On Facebook.
You need that support.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. And that's what.
No, you don't need enablers. You don't need.
No.
You need people to help stay focused on your goal.
Yeah. And that's what compelled me to make my confession video on what I had eaten.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that I have this scale, really...
Yeah, that's a pretty nice scale, man.
Yeah, it really put a fire under my ass.
Wait, because it's in front of you now. You know, it's not like, oh, or anything. It's like, you know, you can keep that weight in front of you and keep watching what you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know... You know, I considered a lot of people on Facebook my haters, and some of them are, but some of them were trying to, you know, give me tough love, and I wasn't seeing it at that time.
Sure.
You know, I considered them as a hater.
Because you're emotional, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it's not like you know, it feels good to come out and say, oh, you know, I slipped up.
Right.
You know, like, because I mean, you feel bad already, you know, and then on top of feeling bad, then you got these people who are like verbally abusing you.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a tough one, especially when you get out there and become vulnerable. It's tough, man.
You know, and then, you know, they kept asking, well, how much weight have you lost? How much weight have you lost? And I was like, you know what, leave me alone, you know. And then finally, you know, I got my scale, and then when I weighed myself for the first time, it was 620. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe these people really weren't hating on me.
Yeah. Just trying.
So now that I have this scale, I've been doing real good, and, you know, I want to keep doing real good.
Yeah.
You know, so I know now that I can't have fried chicken.
So what's the support look like? I mean, because I know this for, I just know this for myself, because if I don't make a plan, I plan to fail every time. If I trust Chad's instincts, if I trust my instincts, Eric, I fail every time.
Yep. Yeah. Same here.
I have to write a plan. There has to be prep. Everything has to be in front of me. Because if I don't keep it in front of me and I leave it up to me, I leave it up to circumstance.
Well, you know, you You inspired me a lot too.
Did I?
Yeah, well, I watched you go from the big dude you were to doing these Timmy, you know.
Oh, mercy.
I watched you suffer, dude. I watched you go through that. And that video you made, you talked about your counselor and making a plan. And I'm like, I took that as inspiration from you. And I'm not a good writer, so I don't write it down, but I make a plan in my head now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's because of you.
Use that phone.
Yep.
Thanks, God, Eric, buddy. Because I mean, listen, you have a story.
Mm-hmm.
You have a story. I mean, you've been through some pretty rough patches. You've experienced pretty, you know, and, you know, people like us, because we're our worst enemy. Nobody's going to beat me up worse than myself.
Right.
Because you know why? Because I'll go out there and damage myself even worse.
Right.
That's why I know nobody can beat me up worse. Because I'll go out there, I'll take whatever situation or, you know, whatever circumstance it may be, and I will make it worse because I will beat myself up by relapsing, like you said, eating more, whatever the case may be. And we know what real pain feels like.
Yep.
Oh, I mean, I woke up in the ER.
Yeah, I remember that.
I got to the point where I gave up on myself.
I remember that.
And I can relate to that Eric that has gotten to the point where, like, I hate myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody would be better without me. I'm a burden on everybody. I cannot succeed at anything. I fail at everything I touch. I can't do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
I know what mental pain feels like. I know what physical pain feels like.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've learned on my journey is because we're all human.
Right.
Like, I don't know what the statistic is of somebody just like saying, hey, I want to lose weight, and all of a sudden they just lose the weight with no relapses. And
right.
Because as humans, we have to battle ourselves every day.
Yeah. So,
you know, and it's what you do, Eric, too. I mean, you do the exact same thing. Like, you pour into people all the time because you want them not to feel like you do.
Exactly.
You want them to succeed. Like, you get happiness on helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the same. And so here, you know, here was my last relapse. Here's my last relapse. I almost go to a Mexican's prison, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is my rock bottom. And instead of allowing this to beat me, I'm going to use it as a learning tool.
Yep.
Somebody out there who can relate where I'm at, who may be right now in a dark spot, maybe I can give them some words of encouragement that's going to pull them out of that dark place where I know I've been. I don't want them there. Maybe I can say something that will show the humanity, show the vulnerability, and it's okay. Like, it's okay. The most important thing that you can do for yourself is just don't give up, because if you give up, that's when you fail.
Yep.
As long as you keep making strides in the right direction, you're moving forward.
Exactly.
You're moving forward. And so that's awesome, Eric. Like, I mean, I'm so proud of you, but
I appreciate that.
I hope you know that.
Like, well, I hope you know how proud I am of you, too.
I appreciate that, brother. I do. I appreciate that. We've been good support for each other.
Yeah, you're a huge inspiration to me, man.
I'll tell people the same thing. I tell people the same thing on my social media. Because I didn't even know your story. I know where you've come from to where you are now, dude. I can't support you enough, man. Like, honestly, buddy, I can't support you enough, man, because I want you to be proud of yourself.
Exactly.
I want more than anything in this whole entire world for you to be able to hit your weight butt and turn around and look at what you have overcome. You are setting not just a great example into your social media. I mean, look at what your kids get to see.
Yeah.
Show your kids that dad's been at the bottom of the barrel. And you know what? You know what? Even after all that, after all I've been through, you can still make a choice.
You exactly.
choose to live a better life.
And exactly.
You're doing that. You're doing that for your social media. You're doing it for your kids. But more importantly, buddy, you're doing it for you. Who deserves it the most, Eric?
Yeah, I agree.
You deserve it the most, buddy. Absolutely. Well, you know, as we come to the end of today's episode of Rock Bottoms Up podcast, I want to leave you with this message of hope and inspiration. No matter how deep the struggles or how daunting the journey may be, as Eric has been so vulnerable to share with us, there's always a way forward. Eric today has shown us that even in the darkest moments, there is light to be found.
Yeah.
And even the smallest steps forward can lead to profound transformations.
Yeah.
Let his story remind us that recovery is not just about overcoming addiction or shedding pounds. It's about reclaiming our lives and rewriting our futures. It's about finding the strength within ourselves to keep moving forward, even when faced with adversity. So, Eric, and to all those listening who may be battling their own demons, remember this. You are not alone.
No.
Your story is not over. And every day is an opportunity to take another step towards healing and growing. Eric, thank you for joining us on this journey of resilience, redemption, and renewal. Until next time, guys, keep your chin up, your spirits high, and remember that even in the darkest of times, there is always hope. Stay strong, stay inspired, and keep reaching for those brighter tomorrows. This is Rock Bottoms Up Podcast, signing off.